From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about what's proper. What's proper, even if it sounds a little bit stuffy. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me, as they do each week, New York Times bestselling authors and language experts, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Well, hey, Kathy, at your home in Armenia. Ross, you there at your home in Toronto. You're both in your best evening wear because we are getting fancy for today's episode. Or maybe stuffy? I guess sometimes fancy and stuffy can go hand in hand.
So you don't think the evening gloves and the strapless gown is too much? You
no, think it's absolutely fine? Not. I think it's entirely appropriate for what we're doing here.
And this is a question I have. I was watching a Poirot last night. Now, should I be wearing black tie or white tie? I don't know.
White tie is fancier.
It is, yes.
Yeah. So my black tie is all right, though,
yes,
because it's a little bit lower key.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Just want to make sure.
It's a little down market, Ross. It works.
Wait, which Poirot were you watching?
Do you want to hear something really horrible?
Of course.
For years, the Suchet Poirots?
Yeah.
David Suchet, for years, there was a picture of him looking sort of stuffy, oddly enough, and very prissy. So I decided that I never wanted
you
to watch
told
him.
Me not to
and
watch
And I told
that.
Kathy not to
you
watch
You didn't
him.
Want to watch Suchet? Really?
No. And I always thought I would give people lectures on how obviously he blew it without having ever seen him. Anyway, I saw Suchet in another show. I forget what it was. I think it was a Trollope film or whatever. And he played this moneylender guy. And I remember thinking, he is brilliant.
Yeah.
He is a really good actor. So I was at the library, you know, sorting books, and someone had donated a collection of Suchet. And I told Sylvia, I said, let's give him a shot. And he is Poirot. He's
yeah.
fabulous.
Oh, yeah. He's the
well,
best.
I'm so
yeah.
annoyed with you.
But the wonderful thing is, because we didn't watch him, we have 70 episodes to watch. So I'm in love. I think he is superb. He is Poirot. So.
Randy told me that we should watch it. I was like, oh, no, no, no. They're awful.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, we got an email from one of our listeners, Todd, who brought this up, this idea about the stuffiness of English.
Hello, Kathy, Ross, and Fletcher. So you've previously discussed several instances of words and phrases that most people, at least per the rules of grammar, say incorrectly, yet the incorrect version sounds more correct to our ears. This includes your great episode that debunks the idea that ending a sentence in a preposition is something to be chastised for. Do you see what I did there? I'm not that clever. A game that I like to play upon hearing something that is ostensibly incorrect is to try to parse out, okay, well, what is the correct version? And this can make for some fun things like, instead of saying, it's me, you can say, 'tis I, or something to that effect, right? But it also leads to some really absurd parsing out of the language. I can't think of any others off the top of my head, but I was wondering if maybe you could, or maybe you could throw some phrases at Fletcher to see what he comes up with as the supposedly correct version and see how kind of ludicrous they can be.
So he was just asking generally about that, and we replied and said, you're talking about technically correct, but sounds stuffy, which is something we both, Ross and I, talk about a lot, because our mother was always technically correct and did tend to sound stuffy, didn't she, Ross, actually, come to think of it?
You would call her on the phone, and I go, hi, Mom, and she'd go, I go, who is it? And she would go, it is I.
Mm-hmm.
But we've talked about this, Ross, because I say it is I.
However, Kathy, I caught you, we were talking about this too. And Kathy, I think we could start with this. I'll mention one thing. Kathy was saying how she always says it is I. I know it is I, but I say it's me.
Mm-hmm.
But then we were talking, and Kathy said she's really aware of that distinction. Mm-hmm. And we were chatting about this really annoying influencer, or I forget, just really annoying, but that's not neither here nor there. Kathy said then, yeah, it's her.
No, actually, it was about a group, and I said, yeah, that's them.
That's them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's them.
Which is technically incorrect.
Right.
So even Kathy, who's very aware of it, inadvertently reverts to the incorrect version.
So technically, it should have been, that is they?
Yes.
Okay.
Fletcher, do you know why?
Something about subject-object stuff, probably.
Hey, you're right.
that's the best I can do for that. It does sound weird, though. I don't ever hear anybody say something like, that is they.
But don't you say, I do say, that is he.
I say, this is he, if somebody is asking for me on the phone.
Interesting.
But honestly, I think I just picked that up from my dad, who does usually get things correct.
Yeah.
The key thing really is we're talking in a way, when you say he, it's not an object of the verb. Because is, am, the to be verb is a linking verb. We talked about linking verbs before.
Yeah. Remind me.
It's not like an action, like Fletcher hit Ross. That's an action. The hit is an action verb. Uh-huh. Okay, or Ross hit Fletcher, I prefer, frankly, whatever. Okay. It's a state of being. It's a state of like, Fletcher is good. It doesn't, the verb doesn't really relate to anything. It equals, Fletcher equals good.
Yeah, it's not describing an action.
The is just an equals sign, basically.
What we're basically saying is it's not really an object. We're saying the I is an identity. It is I. The subject is it. And it's saying the same thing. It's not doing anything to the I. It just is. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. Whereas if you say, like, Fletcher hits Ross, Fletcher is doing something to Ross.
Right. So Fletcher hit him instead of Fletcher hit he, because...
Right. But Fletcher is he.
Yeah, it's the I's, or that form of it follows, as Ross said before, a linking verb. Like, is, was, were. Uh-huh. It's like... That's the easiest way for me to always remember it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But it does sound weird. It sounds weird. Why does it sound weird? How did it get to where we all say it wrong, technically, but that sounds right?
I'm going to give you a quick guess. We just said linking verb is to be. Another linking verb is seems, appears. We have a few linking verbs. Now let's think of regular verbs.
Mm-hmm. There's a
there
lot.
Thousands of them. So I think we get used to hearing the verb being an object, I think.
Yeah.
We're just used, with the, verb having an object, so we're used to it.
Yeah.
So we automatically, Fletcher, I don't know, hit blank, hit him.
This Fletcher, is a violent day
hit?
So far.
Oh, you know the problem? Yes.
the problem is? This always fascinates me. I was reading Latin this morning in Virgil again, and they're like, hundreds of words in Latin that have like hitting or violence related words. And always fascinated me. Whereas like Greek will have hundreds of words of people, ancient Greek will have hundreds of people babbling about stuff. And I think it's just like, so I think I'm in a war. I mean, Aeneas is fighting to free, to like set up, his basic homeland. So I think I'm back into hitting everyone because everyone's spearing or hitting or fighting or whatever. So forgive the bloodthirstiness of this little lecture here.
I just want to add, though, that for all of us saying technically correct, over time, you were just saying it. It was the 18th century, I think, when we always talk about those guys that were always like coming down with their huge rules, like this is never done. Mm-hmm. That it was really huge. That it is me wrong. It is I. But mm-hmm. frankly, in the 20th century, certainly, it's become widely accepted. I mean, I'm not a huge Drunken White fan. But they said it was, it is me is fine. Mm-hmm. And their quote, which I loved, it said, would you write the worst president around here is I, or the worst player around here is me? They said the first is good grammar, the second is good judgment. And I actually really like how that sounds.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good line, Kath. I think that's really good. I think it's true. Also, though, to add to this, though, were I writing...
Were me piece. Writing, Ross.
Were one to write formal piece. I think I would get around. I don't think I would use the incorrect me. I would try to do it. What was the statement again, Kath, that you made? What was it again?
They said, would you write the worst player around here is I, or the worst player around here is me?
I would rewrite it as I was the worst player around here. I would avoid the is me.
Yeah,
or
it,
is
it sounds really,
case.
Really like passive.
It's a bad sentence.
Yeah, it is a bad sentence. Well, but it illustrates the point.
Yeah.
But you know what? I would almost never write the technically correct version of these things either.
No, that's why, again, I think I would work around it. I was the worst player around here is what I would do.
Yeah.
Instead of saying is me or is I, mm-hmm. leaving it like that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm just thinking when I speak, I do say it was she who did that. I don't usually say it was her.
It was her.
I don't.
But you did that. But we were talking earlier though, but you did go, it's
them. Them is different to me. That's what I'm saying. It's funny. It's different. I'm just trying to think. I wouldn't say it is they who did. I might. Yeah. But I would say it's them. I don't think it's they. I think if I do the contraction.
Oh, that's good,
enough.
Kat. That's really interesting. I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if I were just speaking as we're going through this, I wouldn't say any of those things. I'd just say she did that. Not it was she who did that. Like I wouldn't, and it,
that's
wouldn't
a
even,
lot better.
It wouldn't even occur to me to say it was she. It would just, she did that.
Okay, actually, I'm going to throw out something here, Fletcher. This is sort of fun. This is technical now, which is correct. It is I whom you called. It is me whom you called. It is I who you called. It is me who you called.
Oh, God. Is it really it is I whom you called? I think whom you called him. I think whom should be correct there, although I would never say that. And
yeah, I know. We're getting really kind of esoteric here.
It is me whom you. Goodness, I don't actually know. I don't know.
That's actually a really good one, Ross.
I know. I really like it. Let's repeat it. Let's give you one last shot. We're gonna repeat it again. It is I whom you called. It is me whom you called. It is I who you called. It is me who you called.
This is so hard. I guess it is I whom you called. That's what I'll go
with. You got it. You had it right the first time when you said that.
Really?
You're right.
Really?
And that's, I'm sorry, it sounds so annoying. I would say it's me who you called. I mean, I would never say it is I who you called.
I completely agree with all of you.
If I ever say that, you could like throw a glass of water in my face. I mean, really.
No, it is, Fletcher, it is I. You're right. It is I, because we have the linking verb. And then we have a little clausey here.
Whom you called.
You called who? Whom.
Yeah.
You called whom. So you're right. There it's the accusative, or I mean the objective in English. Yeah.
Wow.
It is I whom you called. We should have that as our catchphrase.
It is I whom you called.
It is I whom you called.
Hello, Fletcher. It is I whom you called.
Which leads us then to the whom who.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we have, is it whom did you talk to? Who did you talk to? It's an easy one.
To whom did you talk?
That's the way I would say.
That's the way people say it, isn't it? Although it's fine to end a sentence with a preposition.
Yes.
Whom in that case?
Yeah.
That the way I pretty much always figure it out is that I stick him on the end. And so like you talk to him. And if it's him,
exactly.
Then it's going to be whom. And if it's he, then it's going to be who.
That's such a simple trick. That's exactly what I always done. But I'm always fascinated by how many people say whom at the wrong moment because they think it sounds smarter.
Well, they think, I think maybe even less intentional than that. They just think it's the right thing to say, not even like trying to make themselves sound smarter, but like trying to
be correct.
Yeah, they're trying to be correct, and it is hard to know when to do who and whom. And I will even add to that I basically don't do whom at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I'm writing out a sentence and I know specifically whom should be there, I usually will say who.
Interesting. Kathy and I both are whom people, I think, Kathy. At least
we are whomers, yeah.
We're whomers, yeah, definitely.
I mean, I wouldn't say to who did you speak, right? I wouldn't say that. Like, I would say to whom.
Although, wait a minute. Who did you speak to, Fletcher?
I would say that.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Who'd you speak to?
Yep, I would say that. Yep.
I would actually say who to talk to.
Well, yeah.
I don't usually say speak. If you want the truth.
Speak is even too stuffy for Kathy.
But it's also interesting, too, like for a foreign language learner, because we all agree, we all said who'd-ya, D-Y-A.
Who'd you talk to? Mm. Yeah.
Who'd-ya, you know? Yeah, I mean, it's interesting in that sense, too.
But I mean, I'm I'm pretty clear with myself on this. I even write who usually when I know whom needs to be there.
I can see where you would. Like, here's a sentence right now. Many people dislike the new chairman whom we have elected.
Yeah. I would probably just drop whom altogether and just say the new chairman we elected.
Yeah, which is a nice way to do, which is correct, and it's easy to get rid of the whom. Yeah.
I don't know. While it is technically correct and a lot of people still know it, it just sounds almost affected to put whom in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just try to avoid that, I guess.
I think it's going by the wayside. I think that we're watching whom die. I really do. Don't you, Royce?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's one where I know a lot of prescriptives would get mad at me. I don't think it matters. Do you, Royce?
No, because I think also, I mean, you know, language, you know, changes over the centuries, really, and it changes quickly sometimes over a number of years. But the key thing is English used to be much more inflected. Old English was inflected.
Mm.
And we have, like, remnants of it now with, like, the genitive, with the possessive genitive. You know, it's... You know,
what's that mean?
To show ownership, we change sometimes the verb, the dogs, we say, the dog's bowl. The apostrophe S makes what's called a genitive case. It makes the, shows the ownership of that bowl. But English used to be inflected all over the place, and we have like your remnants of it,
the
dog's bowl. But most things have changed. Who and whom, and then the him, obviously, and him and her, that's... The word changes depending on what function it plays in the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Him and her, obviously, and his and her, and she and her and all that, those are pretty valuable to us. I don't think who and whom doesn't really have that much value. It's going along with the general changes in English, and it's getting rid of ones, it's sort of jettisoning ones that don't really matter that much. And I don't think it really matters.
Yeah, the word who is just serving both functions now.
I had seen an interesting article. It was a linguistics professor, and it's a study that's being done, oddly enough, in English linguistics at the University of Freiburg in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they were saying that whom is weakening because people are using who, and it's becoming more, instead of being grammatical, it's becoming like a style thing.
Mm. Which that's interesting.
And that makes sense to me. They're saying because it's being used, so it's being used incorrectly when it's used a lot now. People are showing it up because whom do you think is next, which is obviously wrong.
Right.
So they're saying because there's no regular grammatical use of it, it's becoming a social thing, a stylistic.
Oh, wow. That is really interesting.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Which I thought that was really fascinating.
It's also becoming sort of dangerous. I was at the university a couple of weeks ago and someone... made a joke and they were wrong. I didn't say anything. You know, who's who? You know, who's who?
Uh-huh.
Or not, sort of snarky. And they said, well, obviously they're wrong there. It should be who's whom. And they're not, it should not be.
Who is him?
Yeah, right.
Who is him?
Okay, so we're moving along now. We have to go, let's see, from whence did we come or whence did we come?
Oh.
This is Kathy's favorite.
This
whence?
This is a big
whence,
one for me.
From whence, from where? Catherine, go with it. This is your favorite.
Okay, I'm stuffy. I hate it when people say from whence. I do. And I hear people that are trying to be like very, you know, hotsy-totsy with their language going from whence. But whence means from what place or cause. So technically, from whence is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So the people that are saying from whence are being redundant.
This is like calling something chai tea.
Yes.
Actually, that's a very good example, which also drives me crazy.
Although it's funny because the other day I was reading an article, I think it was in the Times, immigrants are being returned from whence they came.
Is it correctly returned whence they came?
Yes.
Or is that being, yes. is that being stuck?
Came.
Okay,
yes.
It really is.
And I just want to say,
from where they
Samuel
came.
Samuel Johnson and I see eye to eye on this one. I just want to say, Sam and I like this. But a lot of people do say whence now, from whence, I'm saying. And it's not really considered wrong anymore. I still think it is.
And I'm going to interrupt Kathy here because we have a couple of examples. Jane Austen in a letter from whence.
I am not a Jane Austen fan.
Okay, what about, okay, well, okay, let me throw it. So let's calm down here. What about Lord Byron? from whence like it will be forward to me.
I am not a Byron fan. He was an egotist, like one.
I don't think I really knew that whence meant from where. I don't think I really knew that from was in there. But it's pretty much just like a phrase now, almost an idiomatic phrase, isn't it? It's sort of hardened into this incorrect grammatical version of itself, and people now say from whence it came.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right.
Yes.
Without any regard to whether it's grammatically correct or not. Like, it's just that phrase.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah, no, it's very true. It also just drives me. Frankly, though, I don't like whence either. I think that you could just say where they came from.
Sure.
I don't, there's something, unless writing like
Kathy's
a Burnesque poem, when you must use a whence for some reason.
What if you're talking about sending some kind of Lovecraftian beast back to the
depths of doing whence it came.
That's
yes,
right.
I agree. Yes, I agree.
But no, I'm not fond of whence.
I'm not either, really. I never would say it, but I no longer would say it.
A quick aside for both of you. As a kid, when you learned like the Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you feel really smart when you first
yes.
learned oh. wherefore oh. didn't mean from where?
When I was a kid? Oh, I still do. I still think to myself, does that person saying that know that it really just means where?
I know. Do you know where I learned it? I think probably you did too, Kathy, for Peanuts, the cartoon.
Yes. Oh, wow, you're right.
Linus comes and tells everyone what it really means.
Yeah.
He discovered that. And I did too. Kath, I can stand it no longer. I would never say that.
I can stand it no longer. I can't stand it any longer. So are you telling me that I can know is the correct version? I can stand it no longer?
I could stand it no longer is correct.
But we would mostly say I couldn't stand it any longer.
Yeah, interesting. We
I
sort
would
of
say
reverse those.
I can't stand it anymore, I think.
Well, yeah.
But no longer is technically the more formal.
Oh, wow.
Any longer is the more casual use.
Mm-hmm.
That one, I don't think I would ever say. I don't think I've ever said. I think I say any longer all the time. I don't think I ever say no longer. Do you guys?
I could do it no longer. No, pretty much never. That I don't even know if it would occur to me to say that.
Except like she no longer wears.
Yeah, okay.
That one, I was just looking
that
at
one.
It.
Yeah.
But that's like fancy writing. I don't think you'd ever say that conversationally.
Kathy, you no longer wear skirts. No, I would never say it.
Yeah, no, I don't. But
you don't. Kathy, you never wear skirts anymore. Yeah, I
don't wear
that.
Them
yeah.
any longer.
In
I
conversation.
Don't wear them at all.
But I would write it.
No.
I think. I mean, not every time. Sometimes I would say any longer, but I could see myself saying something blah blah no longer in writing. Sometimes you're just feeling a little fancier when you write and not.
That's what I was going to say. It's kind of like a flourish, I think,
just,
the no longer.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the rhythm is better. Sometimes it just has a better feel for whatever you're writing about.
Okay, Fletcher, after this, I will ask no more questions. After this, I won't ask any more questions.
Yeah, I would always say I won't ask any more questions.
Yep.
I will ask no more questions. Although, again, if you're writing and you're trying to sound like kind of like Byron-esque, I don't know why Byron now is on my brain and I don't even like him, but you would say, I will ask no more questions. It's much more poetic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I won't ask any more questions. I will ask no more questions.
Yeah, but I would almost say any more.
Can we talk about something that's a little bit off track, but I still have never wrapped my head around when I say, if I said something like, it bothers me to no end, that's apparently incorrect, right? It should be, it bothers me no end.
Ooh.
I have never thought of that.
Oh, really? This is something, this is something that the no end people are very aggressive about. instead of, it bothers me to no end, it bothers me no end. And I haven't quite wrapped my head around why no end is correct and to no end is not.
Okay, I'm going to read you a Stack Exchange discussion on this. As I learned the phrase, it's simply he annoys me no end, meaning literally without limit and actually a great deal. He annoys me to no end would mean without any purpose. But since Why? Most people aren't annoying deliberately, I can't see how the phrase would be useful. That's how the discussion opens.
Yeah, I'm looking at the rest. Yeah, and everybody's saying the same thing. To no end in the United States, mainly. It just means no end, so it's fine.
Yeah, yes. Okay.
But no end, I'm just looking now, American Heritage Dictionary of Idioms. No end, a large number, a great deal. So he annoys me no end, he annoys me great deal.
Here we go again with the problem sometimes with language. He annoys me no end, annoys me to no end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it does. I mean, people really get annoyed by this. Like the people who insist on no end instead of to no end. I just haven't quite understood why it's such a big deal to them. Maybe maybe somebody can write in and like work really hard to explain it to me, like I'm
why it's so annoying.
Like I'm kind of a dummy, which I kind of am.
Well, what they're saying here, I mean, we said earlier that they're saying basically the latter one, to no end, doesn't really have a meaning.
I mean, yeah, it
but
does.
I think that we've taken that as an idiomatic phrase meaning what we think it means.
Okay, no, I'm saying, Russ, to no end meant without achieving any useful result.
I mean, that looks like kind of...
That makes sense.
Yeah, but it kind of looks like we're quibbling over the definition of end in that case. Why can't it just mean no end point? Mm. Well, like, why can't it just mean that when I say to? I don't understand why it has to mean no purpose when I have the to in there.
And they're saying here that the to no end as a variant of the adverbial form of no end, as of 10 years ago, hasn't in the dictionaries yet advanced to the status of a legitimate variant form of the idiom.
I think we should just say he annoys me a lot. He annoys me incredibly.
but going back to the thing though, it is really funny because I don't think I use it, but I would hear he annoys me no end as not as pleasing as he annoys me to no end.
Right?
To no end, I hear.
I agree with you. Because to me, it means he annoys me to no end. It's limitless. It's like all the way. I can't walk to it. It's so far how much he annoys me.
Yes, exactly. I hear it that way too, even though they're saying here it's technically wrong.
But boy, they're getting heated here.
See,
too.
I told you, they really do.
I know. It's dangerous.
Yeah, here's someone saying it's meant to be. He annoys me no end. It's meant to be. He annoys me no end. If it's to no end, it's a typo.
I know.
We're spoken of misspeaking.
I know. People are like shouting it. I know. I see big caps and stuff like that too. You're right, Fletcher. Oh my God. Yeah, I like this one. He annoys me ceaselessly. Now that sounds stuffy. Yeah.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts or by visiting us at KMUW.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.